And then this usage number four. This is the one that I started out sharing some of those incidents about Jericho and so forth. Fear, negative believing, the absence of believing, the opposite of believing, no trust, no confidence. It brings negative results, but it usually takes time for the consequences to come into fruition. And there's sort of three sub-usages under that. And the first one would be doubt, which is to waver the beginnings of negative believing in the mind. And classic example of that is Mark chapter 11. Verse 22 through 24. And Jesus answering saith unto them, have faith in God, or have the believing of God. For verily I say unto you, that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart. That's the phrase I'm looking for here. In other words, if you're believing, you shall not doubt in your heart. That's the first step of not believing the word, is you start with a doubt. But shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe that these things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. James chapter 1, verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God. Well, that's a good bit of advice. That giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given. Let him ask in faith or believing, nothing wavering. Okay, that word there, nothing wavering, that's the same word that's translated doubt in, back there in Mark 11. For he that wavereth or doubteth or doubts is like the wave of the sea driven by the wind and tossed. You know, you believe this way and then you believe that way and then you believe this way and then you believe that way. That's what doubt starts to get to do. It starts to get you going back and forth. Then you get into worry. Now, you don't see the word worry in King James, but if you go to other translations, you do see the word worry used. So I'm going to read from the New International Version. If you want, you can go to Matthew chapter 6, verse 25 through 34, and read along in the King James, or you can just listen if you want. But in Matthew chapter 6, and from the New International Version, reads as follows. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not the life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air, for they do not sow or reap or store in barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are ye not much more valuable than they? And who, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? You know, if I worry about it, you know, am I going to live to be, you know, 82 instead of 71 or whatever, you know? No. And why worry about clothes? You know, well, I guess maybe you worry about that you get the colors matched or something, or they're clean maybe. But, you know, we don't really worry about it. See the lilies of the field grow? They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today, and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, will he not much more clothe you, of ye of little faith, or little believing? Verse 31, so do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? This is interesting, this translation says, for the pagans run after all these things. Well, I don't want to be a pagan. And your heavenly Father knows that you need him. You know, God knows you need something before you need it. He's lots of times already preparing to fill the need before it even comes up. But seek ye first the kingdom of his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble on its own. That's a pretty good translation. I picked up one of those recently, a New International Version. It's kind of a nice... I still like King James, but sometimes it's nice to read it in another version. Then the third version, I have 4A, that was 4B, this is 4C. Negative believing starts, fear, which is negative believing, starts in the mind, settles in the heart, and ultimately issues in unbelief. Here's a great example of this in Esther. If you really want to get the story of this, you might want to someday read the whole book of Esther. Esther chapter 7. This would make a whole good teaching all in and of itself as well. But I'm only interested in one section right now. Chapter 7, verse 6. And Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman." This guy Haman had been trying to do all these bad things to the Judean believers, and to he had all sorts of awful things that he was planning to kill him, and all sorts of other things like that. And finally, Esther points the finger, and just when the time was right, spoke the right words and got the guy in trouble. Then Haman was afraid before the king and queen. Said, "Uh-oh, he's been exposed." You know, the queen came out and labeled him. Right, what he was doing, you know, and said, his deeds were out in the open, and it was exposed, and he got afraid because the king had the power to lop his head off. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden, and Haman stood up to make a request for his wife to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. And the king returned out of the palace of the garden. He went back out and he found Haman was on. He goes into his queen's bedroom and there's Haman on the queen's bed. And he goes, "Uh-oh." He said, you're gonna have my wife before me too? He said, "You not only do this other thing, you're going to do this too?" And the word went out of the king's mouth and they covered Haman's face. In other words, they put his head up, hood over his head, took him off to the executioner, and they hanged him on the gallows, and he was dead. And it was just like, it went from like verse 6 down to verse 10, he's dead. And he went from being on top of the world to being dead. And it was his fear that got him. That's an amazing, amazing record how fear can bring a downfall. And again, we got Job 3:25. We all know that record where he talks about the thing that I greatly feared has come unto me. That which I was afraid of has come unto me. Another great record, Samuel, 1 Samuel 28. Here, the king of Israel, Saul, had gotten a little bit out of fellowship, actually a lot out of fellowship. And the prophet Samuel was no longer alive, and he was looking, you know, he had to go to war against the Philistines, and it didn't look good by the five senses. And he wanted to consult a prophet, and the prophet wasn't alive, so he goes to this prophetess of Endor who conjures up people from the dead. It was like he dialed 1-800 psychic line, you know, trying to get some advice here. So 1 Samuel 28:5. When Saul saw the host of Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart was greatly troubled. And let's skip down to verse 20. Well, actually, what happened is he was afraid there, and then somewhere between there and verse 20, he goes and he inquires on the prophetess of Endor, and what good did it do him? In verse 20, "And Saul fell straightway along the earth and was sore afraid," or very afraid, "because of the words of Samuel." Well, wait a minute, Samuel's dead. What did he hear? He didn't hear the words of Samuel. He heard the words of some evil spirit impersonating Samuel. He, you know, was hearing 1-800 psychic line. You know, that stuff doesn't build believing in people's lives. And what happened is his consultation with this psychic advisor, this witch of Endor, built more fear in his life. And you see by chapter 31, verse 4, he was dead. And that's where it led. The fear, you know, he got what he believed for in his life, and that fear. Another thing, sometimes people don't get what they fear. In Jeremiah chapter 42, 11 through 16, it talks about how God will show mercy upon those people that do his word, and you won't get what you fear. The Israelites, they were afraid of the king of Babylon, and they were going to run off to Egypt. God said, "Stay in Israel, stand your ground, and I'll take care of you. But if you run off to Egypt, what you fear is going to happen to you. But if you do my word, stay here, then I'll have mercy on you and you won't get what you fear. And what happens is sometimes we're imperfect and we mess up and God comes in with his mercy. Mercy is judgment withheld. In other words, you don't get what you deserve. It's like some of you that are parents, your little kid does something awful and he really deserves a spanking, but you decide, well, just don't do it again. I'm not going to spank you this time. You know, that's mercy. You know, sometimes we have fear in our lives and we're just not up to the standard of the Word. We're not quite doing what the Word says. And God just says, my mercy is going to cover it. Let's go to Joshua. Let's close it off in Joshua 1:9. This is a good verse to close on. Have I not commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. See, we don't have to be afraid of the adversary. We don't have to be afraid of what the world fears. We don't have to give in to terror. We can trust, we can have confidence, and we can believe in God, and we can believe in his word. Thank you.